This is Lachlan Rouston.
This is Ralph Friedman. And you're listening to the fittest podcast in Australia,
The Mind Muscle Project. Project, welcome back to this week's after show. We're on the twisty chairs. As we now know, the swivel chair is the optimal chair for podcasting for many reasons. One, when we shoot video, like you're watching right now on YouTube, you can angle yourself towards the camera if you need to make a point, or you can angle yourself back if I need to speak to you.
I'm trying to think of my favorite other podcasters use swivel chairs. Joe Rogan has a swivel chair. Yeah?
Definitely.
Yeah, he's swiveling.
Yeah, because he's got the desk with the four mics.
Yeah, and then so he's yelling at Jamie's swiveling.
Yeah, yeah. No, the swivel chair is optimal. I can't do the... like, because when we were in the Mind Pump studio...
Yes.
They had the big couches, right? And like your arms rested up next to your eyes. For those of you who didn't remember or don't recall, so our last US podcast tour, which was in May 2019... we podcasted with the Mind Pump podcast, but in their studio. We used their recording kit and they sent us the episode. So if we sound extra good, it's because we were using their gear. And it's obviously like a really good studio. But I wasn't a fan of the couches. They're so far away from each other.
It was so hard even getting up out of it.
It's not like
it was so deep. Dude, the armrest, I mean, I'm short, but the armrest was like my eye height.
That was so high.
I could barely see over it.
Yeah, yeah, that was so high. Look, comfortable. Yeah. But I think the problem with, if you're a little bit too comfortable when it comes to podcasting, you can fall asleep. That's my only concern with it. And they fed us way too much of their sponsor's water.
Yeah.
That, what was it called? What was the water called?
That is like crazy energy waters with like outrageous advertising.
Yeah.
And it looks like an alcohol, but it's just water.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I can't remember what it's called. But anyway, that company, that water company raised like $10 million in the last round or whatever. But no. Anyway, regardless. So studio almost there. So we've got the desk being made this week, the new desk, which I'm very excited for. The black top. It's going to have a little bit of some custom features. Going to allow the cords to come through nicely. We're going to keep the headsets for now. It's going to allow, it's like perfectly ergonomical height. So it's like we measured up, we're building it exactly to the height that's like optimal for podcasting. And we're in here, me and Cam, shout out to Cam King, the carpenter, with the tape measure. So we had he was holding the tape measure on his belly and he was like poking me in the belly with it and we were like leaning forward and back, trying to figure out exactly like the optimal sitting.
So when
rate.
You're sitting down, it's at your belly.
Yeah, so like how you and I were sitting now, and then he pulled the measuring tape out and we sat there and imagined this distance apart and we're like, okay, maybe let's slide back a little bit more, we're like, all right, perfect. You know what I mean? Because then you've got to imagine if I had my elbows on the desk and you had your elbows on the desk, would we be too close? Because that's weird as well.
Yeah.
So figuring out that, because if someone puts their elbows on the desk and you're too close, then the other person will naturally lean back and that'll get annoying. But you also want to have a situation where you're both elbows on the desk. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because that's also good, you know?
I didn't realize carpentry was so complicated.
Well, it's not podcasting, it's complicated. Right. Yeah. Which makes the custom desk situation more complicated. But anyway, I feel like we have the perfect width and length. If we get it wrong, it's my bad. But I feel like it's optimal. Because you want that, you know, you want that moment where I'm leaning in and the guest is leaning in and you're sharing something pretty intense, right? Mm. That's the magic of it. Which is kind of what you miss on Zoom, we know, but in the perfect world, that's what we want. So that's what I was thinking of when I was designing the desk. Yeah.
This studio also has it's a little bit bigger than our last studio. And the last studio was just a little bit too small to have someone.
Which one are you talking about? This is our sixth studio.
Yeah, the one in the commons. So
the
last one in the co-working space. It was just a little bit too small considering the size of the guests we had. So when we had John Meadows in the studio, it was just too small. Like he took up, you know, basically half of the room and we were drenched in sweat during it. But I feel like we've pretty much had one of the bigger guys we're going to have in the studio with James Magnusson.
He's big.
Yeah, and it was enough room. He's a big guy. He was like, 6'5", 115 kilos.
Yeah, yeah. I think that this size is, you wouldn't go too much bigger than this. I think if you're going bigger than this, you're getting like crazy studio lights and insane recording equipment and that sort of thing. But I mean, look at Rogan's studio. It's not that big. No. Like, you don't need it to be overly big. I think if anything, the more intimate it is, the better, right?
Yeah, it's kind of a weird one. It looks like inside of a sauna.
Yeah, I don't know. They call it the red pill. So it's like, I mean, I think I prefer the old studio.
Yeah.
Personally. What do you think?
Well, it's kind of distracting, I find, the red.
Right.
Feels like they're in some like weird thing.
Right.
I don't know exactly what it is. Like, it's almost like the back of a nightclub or something. So like, it's like special like VIP area somewhere you can go. But, I mean, it still has good shows.
Mm. Okay, so I was reading this thing, right? I want to get your opinion on this before we dive into some of these topics we've got written down. So, the counterfeit shoe market is obviously huge, right? Yes. And now with, like, sneakers and stuff. So, like, my first encounter with counterfeit items was in Hong Kong when I was a kid, right? You'd walk into a market street or whatever, and it'd be like Gucci and Calvin Klein and all this stuff. But 10 years ago when I went there, it was terrible, right? It was obviously really bad. And you'd have it for 2 weeks and it'd just like be disintegrating, be falling apart, yeah. Be horrible, right? Anyway, so I read this article and it was like why it was on, I can't remember the name of the publication, but it was like a big publication, like GQ or something. And it said something to the effect of why counterfeit is not as bad as it used to be, or why counterfeit is okay these days. This guy was making a moral slash, I guess, like product argument for why you should go counterfeit, which is obviously illegal. Yeah, yes. To go counterfeit, but. What he was saying is, so Nike, how Nike works, right? So say Nike wants to produce 5 million shoes, right?
Yeah.
They contract this factory for 5 million shoes, and just how the economies of scale work, they might have 100,000 pairs of, you know, whatever shoes of material left over after the 5 million shoes.
Generously paying the workers 2 cents an hour.
Yeah. So obviously, they would just probably throw out that material, right? It's no longer useful for them because Nike doesn't want the shoes anymore.
Yeah.
So what happens is
extra material.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
Because you'd always order more than you need.
Yeah. Yeah. So what happens is these companies come in, these companies come in, and they basically come in with the designs, right? So they've deconstructed the Nike shoes. They've basically engineered it down to the final thread of the stitch so that it's absolutely perfect. They give, because obviously Nike pull their designs after the contract, right? It's like illegal for the factories to hold on to Nike's engineering and product designs, right? Yeah. But these counterfeit people have come in and just, you know, built original designs and engineering based off deconstructing the shoe, right? Obviously they're going in they're getting every detail correct from the colors and blah, 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 but they're using the same materials. So the counterfeit people come in and they design the shoe basically exactly to the spec. So much so...
With exactly the same material.
With exactly the same material, right? And they sell it for the exact same price that Nike sell it for. So these shoes... Hold on.
So why would you buy at the same price?
Yeah, so these shoes, right? The Nike sneaker market. Basically how it works is shoes get sold at the normal price, this retail price, right? But just depending on the collaboration or the hype behind it or how many they ran, the shoe could be worth, you know, $5,000, right? But you, it's like a collector's item, right? It's like buying a collector's car. You know, if you bought like a, I don't know, like an original Ford Mustang back in the day, you just paid a normal price for a Ford Mustang.
Yeah.
But over time, it's like 30 times the value. But that's what's happening with these shoes, just on a much shorter time scale. So that's why there's like lines of these kids outside these stores.
Because Nike is just doing a small run.
Exactly.
They sell it and then there's this whatever's remaining. It's difficult to get those.
Exactly. So it increases the value of those shoes 10 times, right? So you can sell them, make huge profit margins on them if you were to sell them. Most people just want to wear them or collect them, right? So they've gone in and they've created these shoes, these counterfeit shoes, which are now, you know, back in the day, counterfeit shoes, you can tell straight away. It's like falling apart, terrible, feels like. Anyway, now it's like basically the box that it comes in is like exactly the same. Like the tissue paper, the print, everything is exactly the same. So much so that they've gone on these YouTube videos, right? These people get these counterfeit shoes and they get the real shoe and the counterfeit shoe. And they go into these like sneaker stores, right? Where these so-called experts are like shoe experts, right? And they go, all right, tell me which one's fake. And they can't tell the difference. They like shine lights over them and stuff. They like, you know, they measure stuff with rulers and stuff. And they're like, I can't tell the difference.
Nuts.
Isn't that crazy?
Because it used to be rubbish.
Oh, rubbish.
You go to Vietnam, it was rubbish.
Like, rubbish. But now it's like completely changed, right? Technology changed. So it leaves me...
But where do you even buy them? Where do you buy counterfeit shoes?
Online. Online. Yeah, you can buy them online.
From like real, genuine Nike seller 664.
Something like that, yeah. But with WhatsApp and encryption and stuff, it's easy these days. PayPal, like it's a done deal.
Yeah.
But anyway, leaves me with the question to you, and I've just kind of been asking, as I've explained this multiple times over the last week, where do you feel you sit with something like this? Like, would you purchase? Because now it's no longer, because the argument was like, would you buy a counterfeit? And goes, no, I would never spend my money on something that's shit, right? But that argument is no longer an argument, right? Because it's exactly the same. We have evidence of people who are experts that can't tell the difference, and it's made from the same materials. So, and Nike's just as much of a piece of shit as the counterfeit people, right? Because Nike underpay workers and stuff like crazy, right? And they're selling them for the same price, okay? So, where would you sit on that? Would you rather buy the Nike Genuine shoe for $5,000, or would you rather buy, which they sold originally at $100, or would you just buy the counterfeit version for $100? Because you are funding an industry which is technically illegal, which is someone else's intellectual property. So that's the moral dilemma, right?
Well, I think, probably beyond just illegal, however the treatment of the workers are, it's probably worse in the counterfeit industry. Because at Nike...
But it's the same factory.
Yeah, but I assume Nike still has, like, you know, these standards to live up to, right? Because the PR, when they, like, treat them too poorly, is horrific for them. They went through that whole process.
No, but it'd be the same factory. So Nike would come in and be like, these are our standards for a factory, and these factories pass that.
You're saying exactly the same workers are creating the shoes.
Yeah. The exact same factory, exact same workers, same production line. It wouldn't be like, all right, guys, the counterfeit guys are here now. They're going to treat you like shit. It's like, no, they're just going to work the same job they do every day, which is obviously horrific.
Fuck.
So what?
I'd probably not do it, and I would say my reasoning would be I got into the counterfeit game. Myself.
Wait, yeah. Tell the audience that story.
So, my experience with counterfeit...
made a lot of money.
Was positive, mostly. So, this was, I want to say, 2011 or 2012, just when TRX was really hitting it huge. And everyone knows TRX, like those straps that come from the military where you can, like, push-ups and, you know, you got a door, you got a gym.
They're yellow. Shit,
right? Yeah. Yellow straps. You can hook them on doors. You can hook them... They're huge, right? They are still in nearly every Globo gym.
Yeah.
TRX straps. And they were selling them for, like, $250. Right, it's very expensive. I found them on Alibaba and I think one of, like, AliExpress for... I could buy them for, like, $12.
What year was this?
I think it was 2000... I was just starting. So, 2010, I want to say.
Okay.
Yeah, I think about 2010, 2009. And... So anyway, so I found about $12, but with the shipping and I had to get a minimum order, I'd probably pay another about $13 in shipping. So the whole thing's costing me about $25.
So you were like 16, 17 at this point?
No, I just left school, 17.
17.
I was 17 years old. This was my, and really everyone got jobs at pubs, right? But because I was young, I couldn't get a job in a pub. It's like, how am I going to make money?
Right.
So anyway, so I could get these for basically $25 and I was like, I remember putting up an ad on eBay. I was like, I'm going to see it. And I was
before
like-
Before you'd ordered the stock.
Yeah, before it had arrived.
Yeah.
Before it arrived. And I was like, oh, I don't think anyone's going to buy it. I'll put it up for like $120 at $250 online. And then I remember going out for a run and I got to the top of the hill and I had like one of those like first iPod touches, but it had internet. And I remember just going on checking my phone and I set it for 5 TRXs. Right, I got to the top of the hill, I'd sold 3.
Wow. Wow. In 5 minutes or something. 10 minutes.
Like,
yeah,
like probably like 15 minutes by the time I came downstairs and left whatever.
Slow runner, yeah.
And... will drag my ass to the top of that hill. And I just could... I'd never forget it. Like, I couldn't... I'd made no money before.
Yeah.
No money. That was like only $400. Like,
yeah, it's crazy.
I couldn't believe it. Like, I'd worked at the cinema and I was making $9 an hour.
Yeah. It's nuts, eh?
It's nuts. It's crazy. That's like my monthly paycheck. I still remember it. I was like, oh my God, I got to get these. So, I basically spent the summer selling as much as I could. So, I still have my old eBay account. I sold hundreds on eBay, heaps on Gumtree. Like, I'd have my parents just taking cash for me, people at the door. Only had one bad experience ever. A guy came back and said the strap broke when he was trying to do push-ups. Gave him his money back. Didn't want to start a fight. But then, in the end, I started getting a lot of cease and desist.
Oh, really?
Yeah, from the company. And then other people started jumping in and lots of people started doing it, started driving the price down. And I was like, you know what? I'm at law school. This is like not a good thing for me to be involved in. But
yeah, because if you get done for something there, that ruins your law career, right?
Yeah, so if I got like a proper thing against it, even if I finished my law degree, very likely I would never get admitted.
Wow.
Because I would have a mark against my
name. That's why you're not a lawyer.
Yeah, I mean, people don't even get accepted because they cheated in one exam when they were at school.
Wow.
So they're pretty strict. But so after that experience, I was like, no, I still think it was all right. I'm still not upset about it. But then I heard a podcast with the owner of TRX.
Oh, okay.
And he went through this like, nah, so he seemed like a really good guy. He's been in the army, everything. And he told the story of how counterfeit nearly destroyed the TRX business.
Yeah, right.
I mean, he's fine now. It's like $1 billion company. But he
is
was
it
talking
that
about,
big?
It is huge. And what changed for them was after the whole counterfeit experience, eventually they cracked down on it, but they moved to making their money through TRX training. So training instructors on how to do TRX class. And you know, TRX classes, like there's a royalty fee going on. So they changed it to more of an education business.
Smart guy.
Rather than the straps business. But he just told the story of how like it was like the worst time of his life, you know, this thing. And like, he was laying off staff and doing this shit because he was getting destroyed by counterfeit. And I'm sitting there like, oh my God, that was me. I was like the kingpin. Kingpin ruining this.
Imagine if he was like, there was this one guy in Sydney who was just destroying our margins.
And anyway, crippled the Sydney having market. To like listen to this show for an hour, I was like, you know what? I'm done with counterfeit.
Okay, so you wouldn't.
So I wouldn't do it. No. Now I want to stay away.
Mm. Interesting. Well, I ordered heaps of pairs of shoes.
Did
so.
You really?
Yeah.
Did you?
Dude, I had to know.
Fuck.
I had to see are it they, in the flesh. Here? Nah, they're coming. I mean, I don't know. Maybe my money's like...
Okay, well, if you ordered it, I'm going to do it. Fuck that.
Oh, fuck.
How much, well, how much do you pay for the Nikes?
Nah, they're cheap, bro. They're like $100.
Fuck.
Yeah. So, no, but the thing is, I wonder... Now I'm stuck with the moral dilemma. I'm like, fuck, this is like a $4,000 pair of shoes. Like retail. And no one can tell the difference. I'm like, do I sell it to someone for like $1,000?
No. No.
That's wrong, eh? That's wrong. Wrong. No, can't do that. No. Never do that.
But see if we can get a sponsor from a counterfeit Nike company. That would be amazing.
That would be kind of cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, they make all counterfeit shit. Like, yeah. And just not counterfeit podcasting gear. Because that would be terrible. Absolutely terrible.
That's unbelievable. Right, so I cannot wait for the shoes to
so
come.
So you passed 200 days as a dad. I didn't know you were keeping count. When are you gonna stop keeping count?
The reason I have is because I have an app on my phone that was like a countdown app until Ziggy was born.
Okay.
And then however this app works, it just keeps counting how many days since until you set. I haven't set like any new dates in this app.
Oh, really?
So anytime I like swipe right on my phone, bring up the control center, like I see how many days, which is why I noticed the 200 days.
Yeah.
So anyway, when you see a milestone, I'm always like, oh, cool. Like thinking about the reflections of it. Definitely. And people always ask now, cause you know, other people like planning, like, oh, like what's your advice and whatever. And I do think, you spend a phenomenal amount of time like worrying about the wrong things.
Okay.
You know, not organizing the right
like
things.
So
I think the best examples is people worry so much about like the sleep deprivation and stuff and what they're gonna do.
Yeah, your sleep deprivation.
Yeah,
yeah. Your sleep deprivation. Yeah, that's a huge one, I reckon.
Right. Everyone's in a panic about it. Admittedly, and obviously it's bad, but first of all, it's like one of the most selfish worries you can have, right? You're gonna be fine. You're like 30 years old. Your body's going to be fully capable of this.
Yeah.
And when you actually get there, I realize like you need to worry so much more about the person that has like just started living.
Mm.
You know, they're the worry here. You're going to be fine with your sleep. And also it's such a stupid worry because there's nothing you can do about it. It's like no planning you can do.
Right.
You
it's going to happen.
Yeah. I don't know. It's like, man, I reckon when I
Well, you did some, you offset it pretty well, like with the glasses and
keeping
him in the bed.
Yeah, you do everything you can, paid for a sleep coach, everything, right? You still try your best and it's hard and some people it's harder than others.
Your parents still made fun of you for getting a sleep coach for them.
Oh, constantly. That's the best money I ever spent. I'm getting them back in. We're going again.
Yeah, right. What does a sleep coach charge for a baby?
Oh, huge range in prices.
Yeah, right.
So like
a PT?
High end. Well, high end, they stay the night. It's $850 a night.
Whoa. Wait, so what do they do? Do they sleep next to the kid?
Yeah, I think they sleep in the room and then when the baby
so you're
wakes
paying
up
someone
to sleep
to
in
sleep.
The room with you. No, they don't just like they're like a babysitter. They'll get up with you when the baby gets up and they're like, okay, cool, I see what's going wrong here, like I don't know, he's cold or like
wow.
Or like this is how you settle him to get back to sleep.
Admittedly, it sounds like bullshit. It does sound like bullshit.
They'll make their careers out of it.
I know, but it just sounds like bullshit. I'm not sure it's not, but it just does. You know, it's just one of those things it does. I'm sure it's legit. It just sounds bullshit.
Yeah, but it's one of those ones that, you know, people are tired. They spend money on it. So it's, I think it's a very profitable industry.
Yeah. That's one. They're desperate.
Second one I would have is, and I think this goes back to like the social media thing, is that if there's ever a time to watch the shit you buy, it's now. They hit you with, you never even think about it. Oh, like I'm just going to buy some stuff, get into it. The amount of shit I have in my apartment now that we don't need we've bought from this. Like, best example is we bought a high chair for him to eat. So he starts eating at a high chair table.
Yeah.
Back in like, you know, 1930s, you just get the chair, $50, you're done.
Yeah.
I spent $500 on just accessories.
Oh my God.
Accessories for this table.
Oh my God.
Like bowls that, it's pretty cool, like stick on the table so the baby can't throw the bowl off.
Oh yeah.
Like different,
suction cup
yeah,
bowls.
Like suction cup shit. Like there's like different things you put over so you can wash them more easily. I got a foot rest for him, like a wood thing that goes across the bowls so he can rest.
A foot rest?
Because I'm telling you, dude.
A foot rest.
If you just go on my phone or my
Why does he need a foot rest?
I just saw it on Instagram, thought it would be
a
cool
my God.
Idea.
You are getting
His feet are dangling and I'm like, oh yeah, it'd be a mad idea. $100 foot rest.
He does not need a foot rest.
And it never occurs to you because before you have them, you don't get targeted with the ads. So you're like, oh, I'm not gonna buy too much shit.
And this then is you, good. You're saving me a lot of money right
however,
now.
Whatever happens, they like, get your algorithm. Okay, cool. Let's just have a baby. Pump him with the ads.
Yeah.
Pump him.
Well, how do they know? You're just on baby websites.
I think it's right? As soon as you start searching, like, how to put the baby asleep, like, what do I feed a baby? You start getting absolutely destroyed. And they know on the ads, like, what month you're up to. Because I'm Googling, like,
yeah,
I think if you Google, like, how to put a 6-month-old to sleep, because all the time my ads now is like, perfect, like, bedtime thing for a 7-month-old.
Or, like, you're searching, like, first trimester, second trimester, third trimester.
It's like, your baby about to turn 9 months, you need this, like, brand new sleep.
That's crazy that they know so accurately. I reckon they know to the day. They probably know to the day when it's due.
And they just get you so, and because you just know so little about the topic, you're like, oh, this ad looks so compelling.
Imagine if you could just send a direct message to Google or the algorithm or whatever fucking social media gods are watching us and just be like, hey, tell me, when do you think my baby is due? And they'd send you back the exact same day.
They would know.
They're probably just telling to the future. They go, oh, it's going to be like this. This is how it's going to happen. It's going to be cesarean. You're going to like want a natural water birth. And then you're going to call this person. And it's going to change. And you're going to rush to the hospital. And it's going to be 3:14 a.m. and a cesarean.
They know. Like, I mean, if you're ever curious if someone is pregnant, just go on their phone, swipe their social media. Because everyone Googles it way before they tell everyone.
Yeah.
Right? You're Googling, how do I know if I'm pregnant? Am I pregnant?
Yeah.
What to do when you first get a positive thing? Right? You Google that. So, like, you know, on our phones, we had pregnancy ads before we told anyone.
Mm.
So, they know way before you tell your family.
Yeah. They know everything. They fucking know everything. Okay. So, you saved a lot of money on excess. You lost a lot of money on excess.
That's the biggest one. I would say, beforehand, you think you need everything and you really don't. I would get so much shit secondhand from other people. You use this stuff for like 1 week.
It grows out of it so quickly.
And then
he's
out, right? It's a complete.
What does he weigh now? Do you know?
Nearly 8 kilos.
Okay. Like 7.5. What do they start at? 3-something?
3.2.
Oh, so he's doubled.
Yeah, more than doubled. You feel it.
Yeah.
You feel it.
So how old is he now? 7 months? 8 months?
7 months.
Okay. So what? At a year, what is he expected to be at?
In terms of weight?
Yeah.
It should be at 10 kilos.
Okay.
10 to 12.
Yeah. Okay. So.
And very surprising. He's in the 70th percentile for height.
So he's like, 70th?
Yes. He's like tall, but he's in the 10th percentile for weight. So he's like tall and skinny.
Okay.
I'm like a complete opposite to me.
You're short and wide, so. But they can like the characteristics can like skip genetics, right?
Yeah.
In a way, yeah. Because I'm like me and my brother are really tall. Like my dad was never as tall as us. My dad's like 6'1", 6'2", but I'm 6'3", Cam 6'4". So, but anyway, speaking of Cam, bro, he's been putting up because he's getting ready for this thing called King of the Ring.
I'm following him.
Yeah, so King of the Ring. If anyone doesn't know about combat sports, but hears me talk about this shit all the time. I know you're rolling your eyes at now, but King of the Ring is like the hardest kickboxing tournament in the world. It's like a movie, right? You have to win it. You have to win 3 fights in the same night in kickboxing.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So
also, it's not fighting.
Not MMA. Yeah. No, it's kickboxing. Yeah. So obviously bigger gloves and stuff like that. And no takedowns and no ground and pound, no submissions, that sort of thing. But a lot of striking. But
3 fights in one night.
To win.
How long
is the fight? The fights, I think it's 3 5-minute rounds or 3 5-minute rounds or something like that. Yes.
He could be fighting for like...
I think it's 3 3-minute rounds. Yeah.
He'd be fighting for half an hour over the whole night.
Yeah, but they also have like, if there's a draw, which happens sometimes, they do a 4th round.
Oh my God.
So like, depending on what happens on the night, like the guy who makes it to the final, right, he potentially might have had 2 15-second fights. Mm. Maybe he just knocked the guy out with a head kick twice.
Yeah.
And the other guy did 2 8-round wars, you know, on split decision.
Yeah, yeah.
So one guy could be coming in.
One guy's like the Mike
battered, bruised, swollen, cut, and the other guy's coming in fresh. And it's just crazy. That's why it's such a crazy tournament. But then what happens more often than not is both fighters have had these long wars. And by the time they get there, they've got 6 7 rounds of hard fighting.
They're broken.
Under the belt for that night. And they're about to go and slug it out to be King of the Ring. Like, it's nuts. Anyway, so he's got his Whoop band on. If anyone listening to this is on the My Muscle Project Whoop team.
Is he in the group now?
Yeah, he's on the leaderboard. Dude, he's top of the leaderboard. He's like beating everyone. He's like 20.6, 20.4, 20.1.
Taking on Andrew.
No, it's smoking Pat. Beats Pat like 4 days in a row, dude.
So this is daily training?
Yeah. I mean, he's preparing for this tournament, so it's peak. So
he's training hard, but...
But his peak training eclipses everyone on the leaderboard. Doesn't even hold a candle to it. So just when you think you're training hard...
All that like... Because all his like sport-specific work, your heart rate is still high.
Yeah. I think this is a cool context to kind of pull, because you don't know what you don't know, right?
Yeah.
So everyone on our leaderboard, they're all like, CrossFitters, endurance athletes, maybe some weightlifters, that sort of stuff. And we all think we train hard, right?
Yeah.
We all think we train hard, but we just don't. Mm. We just don't. I mean, look, Pap's on the leaderboard. He's pretty much always winning and he trains hard, that guy, but he's still doing shit that's like It's not that hard. It's kick sits and it's running and it's kettlebells and it's hard, but it's not fighting. It's not sparring. It's not like, you know, you could go.
It's also the volume, right? Like 21, you need, it's just a certain amount of hours you have to train in a day.
Yeah, yeah. He's doing these crazy long sessions and stuff. Yeah.
Like you, it's challenging to have a job.
Yeah.
And hit 21.
Exactly. Yeah. I think there are some professional athletes in the My Muscle Project leaderboard, but he is like, he's up there now.
Pap.
You mean Pap combined professional athlete. Yeah. But yeah, there's like, you know, that's in a sport getting paid.
Yeah, well.
Yeah, he's in there. If you are a professional athlete and you're listening to this and you're not on the Whoop leaderboard, I would love for you to get in there so we can have some pros in there and kind of see what it's like. Like, it would be, imagine how cool it would be if someone like James Magnussen was in that, on that leaderboard.
We'll get him
back when he was swimming. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I don't know if there are groups, because now in Whoop, if you're on, you can like go into the community and you can find other groups to join.
Yes. But, like, yeah, the Sober October group through, and stuff. But, yeah.
It would be wicked if there was a group like, I don't know, the Manchester United soccer team Whoop group.
Oh, man.
There's got to be that.
Oh, yeah,
right?
Yeah, for sure. It's a locked group. You can't get access to it. But,
It should be like view only.
Yeah. No, absolutely. What is this? What is this best of quarantine you want to tell me?
Oh,
about?
Yeah. So this was, I don't know if people have seen this story. If you're a rugby fan, you would have. But this is probably the ultimate example of, obviously, challenging year. Some people have seriously made the best of this year. Some people have made the worst of the year, just given the circumstances. I think this is probably the best story I've heard in terms of someone making the best of a quarantine. So Argentinian rugby team, the country is fucked with COVID, right? They're really, really harsh lockdown. Most of the team spent the whole year not being able to leave their home, right? So all got quarantined. More than half the team has had COVID personally, right? And they've like been sick, recovered from it. So they hadn't, obviously can't play any rugby all year, can't do any training, can't go to the park. So the whole team that they're still training to, at some point in the year, play New Zealand, best team in the world. Never beaten them in 50 years. So the team to prepare for
it's a long time. And they play them at least once a year, right?
Yeah.
So they've lost 50 times in a row.
50-0. Right? 50-0. They've been like, you know, people that were trying to do this are now dead. and in contrast, New Zealand's been playing rugby all year. They had no COVID.
Yeah.
Right? All year they've been playing. So to prepare for it, there's a video on Instagram you can watch of it. Like literally one of the guys was doing like 21K runs inside his home, right? Like living room to bedroom and shit.
That's
not like
crazy.
Yeah, like running all day. They were, you know, I think they were going slightly stir crazy. Other dudes were like, you know, setting up things, like throwing the ball, like a dude's like just throwing
to his dad on the roof.
Throwing
and stuff,
to his dad.
Yeah.
His dad is like 70, right? It's like his training partner. You know, they do scrummaging, so the guy's like trying to build machines to like scrummage into. Like, you know, you can't kick because you're in your house, right?
Yeah,
you kick the ball, you're not even allowed to go get it.
Yeah.
So this was literally their preparation. Then beyond that, they got to come here. Most of the time, the training as a team was inside a hotel. So, like, they were training in a function area of a hotel.
Yeah, yeah. Like, so, not even a footy pitch.
It's not good enough, right? A function area of a hotel. And there's, like, videos of them, like, tackling each other, like, like a fucking ballroom. Right, so they're prep. And then they have to come here, isolate when they actually get here. And then they got, I think, 13 or 14 days where they could, like, go to the park.
Oh, okay.
In Sydney.
Oh, right, right.
And prepare. Yeah, normally takes 9 months to prepare for this. Anyway, made the best of it. Won the game after 50 years of it, and like they were fully going nuts after, like everyone was crying. But I just thought, I was like, that is like truly the best example of making the best of such a bad year. It would have had, you know, they were training on fucking Zoom, like they had every training on Zoom, every
professional
excuse.
Team. Yeah,
most people thought they were going to pull out, you know, like South Africa pulled out, they got really bad COVID. They're like, we're not coming, like it's just too hard. And they're like, no, we're going to find a way to come over. And I mean, they don't regret it.
That's amazing. That's absolutely amazing. Like considering all the jet lag and stuff like that, and
everything against them.
Because traveling is terrible right now. People would take 4 or 5 flights just to get somewhere. Like it's crazy.
Yeah, it's an absolute shit fight. I mean, it wasn't long ago when most of the team had COVID. The coach was like seriously ill, like seriously, because he's older, you know.
Yeah.
A bit of a weight, like seriously ill from COVID. But man, yeah, if you put your mind to it, you can come out the best.
Yeah, no, that's cool to listen to. I'll tell you one thing that will definitely not save you from any of that stuff is exogenous ketones. So you know how I get the Greg Knuckles like email?
Yes.
He does like the weekly wrap up. Anyway, he posted this thing. It was about exogenous ketones for like performance. Anyway, so I'll summarize the results for you.
And the purpose of that is it's what you get when you do ketosis, except you don't need to be in ketosis.
Yeah.
So you just like don't need to eat low carb.
Yeah, I think at least one person listening to this has probably taken exogenous ketones. Yeah. For a while, it was going around as like a pyramid marketing scheme. And it was like, you know, drink these ketones.
It's still
like
going,
burns
bro.
Crazy
it's still
energy. Going. Yeah, I know it's still going. But anyway, this is the summary of some research. These results indicate that exogenous ketones do not spare glycogen stores or improve endurance performance. While these results can't necessarily be generalized to resistance training, there's currently insufficient evidence to suggest that the typical lifter could expect meaningful performance benefits from ketone supplementation. So if you're taking ketones to improve your performance, it's not a thing. It's not real.
Man, I don't get how those companies pour like millions and millions of dollars into it. Like they must know this.
No, they do. About. I think I was talking about this the other day with quite a good business person, is you always sell to the uneducated consumer. So what you do is you take science that they could never understand, and you
no interest or time in understanding.
Exactly, right? And you sell to the uneducated consumer. That is how you make millions of dollars, because you take something that someone who's uneducated goes, wow, that sounds really smart. That sounds really complex. Mm. That sounds really cool. I have no idea about that. And I could never understand discern right from wrong, which is fair, right? To the level that we're educated about health and fitness and can filter through
things. Yeah, I mean, we know a lot. And if someone tells me about it, I'm still like, I'm actually not sure if that would work. I would need to like do some research.
Yeah.
Because it's hard to know.
Yeah. So you would just find, say I bring out a supplementation like exogenous ketones, yeah. right? And I think, okay, what are the benefits here? Well, the benefits, okay, there's no benefits, but the fake benefits, the fake benefits that I can market, there's some things I can't do. I can't be like, all right, this thing fucking, you know, I don't know, this thing makes you shredded or whatever, or this thing builds, you know, 50 times the amount of muscle. It's like, okay, this thing improves endurance performance or improves energy levels or brain function. So those are the two main benefits. And now I go, of all the consumer groups that could benefit from this particular symptom, I'm going to pick the least educated one and push it towards them. That is how you do it. That's how you sell heaps of stuff, because they go, oh, awesome, I want increased brain and focus, but I'm not educated or smart enough to know whether it can do this or not. But everyone's selling it to me in the marketing's, you know, convinced me, I'm going to buy lots of this. That is how you actually make money. So if you target the educated consumer, if it was like, all right, let's go to these, like, you know, I don't know,
like, honestly, neuroscientists, like, no, like, or well, even like a My Muscle Project listener.
Yeah.
Someone listens to this show, is like never going to buy that.
Yeah. Yeah, well, someone's fallen for it at some point.
Yeah, one
but then,
person.
Yeah, but now this way. But anyway, that I think that was just interesting.
You know, it's like, it's obviously, I'm sure you've seen Wolf of Wall Street, but that's what they go into. So when he first goes into the way they make all their money is like with the penny stocks, you know, and it goes into and he meets that guy.
His first
job, he's like, oh, so, you know, who buys this shit? And he's like, oh, honestly, schmucks, really.
Yeah, yeah.
They advertise in the back of like porno magazines. They go to like, who knows the least about finances? That's who we're going to sell socks to.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. No, it's true. It's true. Man, I'll tell you the funniest. this is actually embarrassing but hilarious at the same time. I had to giggle to myself. So I was in my new apartment. I'd had all my Manscaped stuff like buried away somewhere. I couldn't find it. I just found it yesterday. So I'm like, cool, I'm going to do a big Manscaped session. Like get everything nice and clean. Had to, you know, use the body wash, like, did all the gels and the balms and stuff. You just feel like fucking $1 million when you do it. And I was just feeling really good. And I walk. So my bedroom is like the... So my balcony faces outwards onto the street. But then my bedroom faces inwards to the other bedrooms. And you have to keep the blinds down, because the window in the bedroom is floor to ceiling. But everyone can see into it. Like all the other apartments in that are facing you can see into it. On the same block, right? So just how the building is shaped or whatever... Everyone has a room that faces someone else's room.
Really?
Yeah.
So you keep your blinds down?
Keep your blinds down.
Yeah, right.
Blinds went down.
Fucking hell.
So I've strolled out like Manscaped confident, butt naked. And I'm like looking for something on the floor, but I'm just standing there like with my hands on my hips, like butt naked.
You,
just like,
you are the pest of this.
Pressing my hips forward. And then I'm just kind of like looking around the room. And then I look through the window, realize the window's open. And there is a table of like 6 or 7 like 70-year-old people playing poker, and they're all staring at me. He's got his cards, and they're like not even looking at their cards. They're just staring at me naked, and I'm just looking at myself. I think to myself, now it's too late. Now if I turn around and I cover myself up, the damage is done. So I just look at them, and I just kind of like turn back. They're still looking. I'm like, okay, and I just kind of like wave, and they just all turn back and look at their cards, get back to the game. I'm like, I don't know, they're 7 years old, they've probably seen a bunch of shit in their life. They're whatever, they're just playing poker, and I just realized, fuck, I have to remember to keep these blinds down, because one of the other rooms, it's like a kid's room. You know what I mean?
You get arrested. Did you at least tell them a discount code?
Anyway, so if you want to feel like $1 million, so confident that nag people, it's MMP20. We've changed it around a few times. Some reason discount codes end up on like these discount websites or whatever.
How are you talking about that badly? You buy counterfeit shoes.
Yeah, I know. But anyway, so we had to change the code. So it's MMP20 if you want to buy stuff from the Manscaped store. Now is the perfect time because coming into Christmas, holidays, like you need to sort your shit out. There's nothing.
If you're in Australia as well, you got budgie smuggler season.
Yeah. There's multiple reasons to do it. And it's a great product. I mean, anyone that's got the Manscaped stuff only posts about it and says good things. So amazing company. Check it out. Manscaped.com. Code is MMP20, one word.
Okay, we've got some listener questions. First one is from the Johan official. I'm in recovery from a car accident.
Jesus.
January 2020. He's had a bad 2020.
Sorry to hear that.
Busted up my right knee pretty bad with lots of soft tissue damage.
Okay.
He has a 100-degree bend now in his knee.
100-degree. Yeah, okay, yeah. That's just beyond the 90.
When I try to push more, it hurts like hell. I'm now scheduled for my fourth operation for a manipulation. Jesus. I wanted to see if you can point me in the direction for a physiotherapist or someone that knows about manipulation. You mentioned this in episode 1.
Mm.
That episode was so long ago.
Episode 1 of the podcast?
Yes.
6 years ago.
Yeah. We did have physios on.
I know, but
we had the physio roundtable.
You mentioned that 6 years ago. I was just inquiring.
Didn't we just upload that, all the shows? Is that why I found it, maybe?
Maybe. I'm not sure. But yeah, I mean, look, I don't know where you live, so I can't recommend anyone, but I would say it's worth checking out Ben Patrick's stuff, Knees Over Toes Guy, because he does have some good rehab stuff in there and just some exercises that you can do to load up the knee and increase range of motion that are like pretty deloaded, like very, very regressed progressions. Like he's got it to the point where he's like the first progressions on his program, or yeah, like the most regressed variation of his program, because it's a pretty simple program.
Yes.
The exercise regression is like, he's like, I have like 80-year-old women that can do it and stuff. And people are posting stuff like, yeah, my dad's like 75, like I got him on Knees Over Toes, he's like moving around better and stuff.
I think the Knees Over Toes program is almost definitely going to be better than whatever you get from a physio you go visit nearby.
I think so. Remember, physios and chiros, even though, you know, they do a lot of good work, you got to remember where their incentives lie. Their incentives still lie on you coming back multiple times.
That's the problem with it.
And I'm not saying that is, I know straight away there's physios, chiros listening to this that are getting upset. I'm not saying that's what you do. I'm just saying that is where the incentives are. And I know a lot of chiros and physios that I know personally that do amazing work, and I would never take away from them. And I will still continue to see them. I'm just saying this is where the incentives lie. So it's always, you just got to make sure you find the right person. Otherwise, they'll be like, it's going to be 10 sessions.
Yeah.
Maybe it only needs 3. You know, so that's all it is. It's just, I just feel like for them, sometimes the incentives can be a little bit off.
Yeah, of course. Well, from their perspective as well, it's like, hey, you know, would 10 be better than 3? Probably.
Yeah. Probably.
You know, but do you really need all 10? Probably not.
Yeah, but I don't know. I can't speak to this. This is a car injury, like knee situation. But I would say that I think it's a bit of both. I think you want to see a practitioner and integrate some of your own stuff. And that's what I do. I generally can get myself out of most pain just by managing volume, change up programming, adding rehab exercises. And then if all those things do not get me to the point that I expect to be at, that is when I'll go see a physician and only someone I trust.
Yeah, I think they only really need to go to someone straight away. It's a serious injury or you're just like a professional athlete or something.
Yeah.
And it's like, okay, cool. Like, you know, just don't even waste your time.
Yeah.
But for most people, you should be exploring and like trying to find solutions.
Definitely. You're just going to get over the fact that you want to squat heavy all the time and you don't want your numbers to go down. Mm. Just let go of that for a bit. You know, just get yourself healthy and then come back to it later. Don't be in a rush.
Okay. Maddie_B_reps. Can you touch on and grow the importance of journaling? Most people serious about their fitness goals do it, but that is only one mental aspect of it, the progressive overload aspect. I would like to see some more importance on the days off and keeping that journaling up. Your mind is your biggest muscle.
I don't know if this person was like purposely trying to like lead us into an ad for the training journal. We've moved a lot of the logistics of the training journal around. We still have a fair few to sell. Actually, we don't have that many to sell, but we want to keep selling more of them. We will in the future, but exactly what you said, that's why we built the training journal, right? It's to achieve your number one training goal in 100 days, and it's daily journaling with questions specifically focused on training and mental prep and all that stuff. So if we we spent 6 months, you know, building a book for it, spending, you know, we raised $33,000 on Kickstarter for it. So we obviously are massive advocates for it. But right now, you just can't buy any journals because we've just put on pause until we figure out where the logistics are exactly. But if you're still interested in the journals, it's going to be, you know, popping up around. We kind of, we're going to put them up for Black Friday or not? Yeah. Okay. Yeah, we'll put them up for Black Friday. Yeah.
But yeah, what I would add to it is that I do think for most people, when you are like recording your training or reflecting on it in some way, that is usually when your training is going well. And when your training is going usually not as well or it's taking a backseat, it's when there's like no recording or reflection on it. You know, when,
yeah,
you, when you just like train, and you might still be in the gym, but you just train and there's like zero recording of scores, checking how you were before, goal setting around it. Like that's usually where people's training is just sort of on like a nothing sort of spell, right? You're not really traveling anywhere towards it. Anyone that does like really, anytime you're doing really good journaling, like you just can't help but improve because you're like forcing yourself to look at it. What could I do better? Go again. So I'm a huge believer in the habit. And if anyone's seen like the Dorian Yates documentaries, I always think it's awesome. Like he has his training journals from like, he has his training journals from like his first year of training.
Yeah. You know who has that as well? Is Ben Smith for CrossFit.
Oh,
CrossFit
Games
champion. Yeah. He's got the same thing. You know, I'll just, I'll build on top of that point for the next listener question. You know the quote, the unexamined life is not worth living by Socrates?
Like, Socrates.
Yeah. So that inspired me. I fell off a little bit this week, but for a good 2 weeks there, I definitely, I heard it on a podcast, I think it was Tim Ferriss and Naval, and they were talking about this particular concept and how you have to examine everything, you have to review everything, otherwise you can't like readjust and make progress. And I was like, fuck, we do this all the time in our business constantly, right? Almost on a daily basis. We're reflecting on everything we've done, how it's gone, what's the results, you know, but you very rarely do it for your life. And I think that sometimes, and we were talking about this, that I get to the end of the day and I'm like, oh, I haven't done enough today. But what I think I'm just falling for is the recency bias, depending on what the last thing you did, right? Was it, the last thing I did was I made a sales call and I signed someone up to the gym. Oh, successful day. But maybe you did nothing all the rest of the day. Or was it like you had a really productive morning and then just towards the end of the day, you didn't do as much stuff or as much meaningful stuff and you just felt like the day was a waste. But overall, maybe it was better than the other day. It just depends what you did more recently is kind of what you bias towards how you feel about the day. So what I did was I started writing at the end of each day how I spend my entire day. And I just wrote 6 a.m., 7 a.m., 8 a.m., all the way to basically 8 p.m. when I was writing. And I would just write the stuff that I did in each hour. And it was a very enlightening exercise. I think it definitely showed you, because like one of the things that I identified through John Berardi's book 2 years ago or whatever, whenever we read it, Changemaker, he gets you to kind of like stack your values together and figure out what you're good at and what's important to you and what fulfills you. And one of the things was like education. And like obviously the older you get, the less things you tend to start learning like kind of more broadly. And so like reading, basically what I identified from it at the end of the thing, it distilled down to I wasn't reading enough. I wasn't learning enough new things. And when I do, when I make the time for it, like I feel heaps better. Mm. And that, writing that line by line thing, because it gets you to do it in the book, but I hadn't done it like on my own accord since I finished reading the book. It does help you realize, oh man, I've gone like a whole day here and I haven't learned a single thing. I haven't even tried to learn anything. I haven't opened a page of a book. You know, I've trained a few times, I've done some work, but I haven't done some of the things, the most important things to me. So I think it's a really good, even if you just do it for a week, it's just a really good way to kind of break down your week, your day, hour by hour, and look at, okay, actually, how productive was the day? You might look at it, and as you're writing, you're going, holy shit, I wasted so much time today. Or you might look at it and be like, wow, I really did. Even though right now I feel like I didn't accomplish much today, I actually got heaps done. So I think it's a really good exercise, and I definitely agree with that Socrates quote.
Yeah, I think the recency bias is huge. Like, people always get to the end of the year, I think they like look back on the previous year and they plan the next year, and for sure they think about October, November, December.
Yeah.
You know, I don't think many people think about, oh, what was January like?
Yeah.
That shit's forgotten. That shit gone. Is gone, right?
Gone.
I mean, in fairness, that's probably the most unexamined years of the year is January, February, March. You know, because you kick it off, you're like, boom, let's go. And then you're like, you know, that's just so long forgotten when you come round to the point of like, how did the year go? You know, you just, it's gone. And you just always, it's like one of the strongest ones you have, I think, is thinking about like, what was the most recent?
I think like the longest, the year that would feel longest to you is when, say, every month of the year you spend it in a different city. Like imagine how long that year would feel, because there's no consistency, there's no routine, right? But it's enough time to be able to like settle and do something in each city. That would feel like the longest year ever. It's like when we do a podcast tour, right? We go to fucking 8 cities in 2 weeks. It feels like 2 weeks feels like, I don't know, 6 months, you know, because you've changed up so many different things. You have so many different identifiable points in your mind's eye about where was I at this time and reflecting on it and the different memories from it. So yeah, it's just interesting how you perceive time and how the mind stores memories.
Yeah, I sort of started, I was talking about the difference between like being someone that has a lot of routine and someone that doesn't. And it was saying like having a lot of routine does seem to like make you more productive and a bit happier.
But less interesting.
But it said that people that have like less routine seem to feel like their life is longer.
Interesting.
Like people that have a lot really well kept routines tend to feel like their life passes them by much more quickly.
Definitely.
Because it's just like less mental points to turn to. How was it? Like, it's hard to like think of things that happened in the last 9 months. The people that are like much more, it's like, just like change it up. I do this. Like, I guess just do things much more on a whim. They point to way more things. So it feels like, life has been going for a much longer period. It's like in general.
Yeah. That's why this year for me feels like such a long year. Because I moved places. I quarantined twice. You know, we changed the business model. Yeah. We sold the gym. We moved podcast studios. Like it's we did so many different things outside of our routine. And really only now have things kind of settled.
Yeah.
You know? And that's taken all the way up until November. Like 6 weeks.
I feel like I'm
really
settling into this year. And my New Year's plan sort of. Right in time for New Year's.
Yeah.
Okay. DM Strawn. In physical fitness, recovery should be proportionate to the stress of training. Is recovery as highly rated as it should be in relation to our mental stress and load? What are some ways to notice if you are under-recovering and what are some ways to improve recovery?
Well, get a Whoop band.
Yeah.
Because what you measure, you manage, which is important. And I think also just your perception of recovery is often not aligned with your objective data on recovery. It's what I've noticed a lot using the Whoop band. Your intuition is accurate sometimes, but not all the time. Again, it's recency bias, right? You may have slept really well, but maybe the last hour of your sleep, it was kind of shitty. Like something woke you up or you got a bit hot or whatever. And you're like, I slept like shit. But actually, you know, the Whoop's like, you slept really well.
I find that all the time with sleep. Like I'll wake up sometimes like I'm really tired and it's like really early and fuck. But often you just woke up in the middle of a sleep cycle.
Yeah.
And then I check my Whoop and I'm like, it's like 97%. Yeah. I'm like, you know what? I actually feel great.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
But if I'd woken up 20 minutes earlier, I probably would have felt great.
Yeah.
You know, so that recency bias is huge for recovery.
Yeah. And it doesn't take away from the fact that you still feel bad when you wake up and you might be groggy for a bit, but ultimately, overall, you've had enough sleep cycles, your body's recovered. Nah, you're good. Yeah, you're good. But in terms of recovery, I do think that younger people that are like really in their peak training years, I think.
What would you call that?
Probably like 15 to 35.
Yeah.
Like you definitely undervalue recovery. I think I was saying this to someone the other day because someone kept going, oh, you know, I work so hard and this hard. And I'm like, look, hard work is only a necessary part of a much larger equation. If hard work was the differentiating factor between success and not success, then the guy, the immigrant from the corner store would be a billionaire. He works just as hard as you, if not harder. I don't know, probably bringing up a family of seven on like a tiny wage and he's like hustling, he's doing 24 hours, these convenience stores are open. I'm like, hard work is not the determining factor here. Hard work is just part of it. And the same, and then how I relate that to health and fitness in this example I was telling someone is like, you can outwork me in terms of intensity and hard work, in quotations, every single day in the gym. But because of my experience and because of what I know about the body and recovery, I guarantee you I will get better results. So the same logic applies to, you can probably think of right now, if you're listening to this, you can probably think of one or two people that work their ass off in the gym, work like insane, always go hard in the workouts, always lift the heaviest weights, always push themselves, don't get results, right? Their body hasn't changed. Their weights haven't gone up. They don't really look like they're trained maybe. And that is because hard work is not the determining factor here. Hard work is only one part of the equation. You need the right program. You need the right recovery strategies. You need the right supplements. You need the right hydration. You need the right coaching. You need the right form. There are all these other factors that you need to plug hard work into. And I think recovery is a hugely missed piece here. People don't put any value on recovery. They just put all the value on working hard in the gym and like trying to eat the right macros and stuff like that. I know nutrition comes into recovery, but I think it's definitely underappreciated in people's like sub 35 years. It's not only until like you go into the gym, like, oh, it turns out I can't really like just smash myself and go super high and you get some nagging injuries or you're tired all the time or you have less time to train, all those factors that kind of come into it. You're like, so this recovery thing, tell me more about that. You know, that's when the conversation sort of starts. So my point is if you can start valuing it more early, which is simple as looking after your hydration, getting enough sleep, just basic stuff like that, not overtraining, maybe taking some more rest days, some more active recovery, just the basic stuff you hear all the time, you will get much better results. Definitely.
Yeah, Yeah, and in terms of how to tell if you are under recovered, I would say that one of the best ways is, well, also I would say, is just progress.
Yeah.
So if you're making progress in your training, because you're making progress.
Yeah, yeah.
So you're recovering, you're adapted from the stimulus you've put on your body. You've adapted more than what you need to adapt to it. So now you can do even more, right? So you're progressing. So like by definition, you're not really under recovering. Could be getting to the limits, but if you're still making progress, you're not. The only other reason you could be not making progress is because you're just not training enough. Like you're not putting enough stimulus into your body. But probably if you're thinking about, am I like not recovering enough? You're probably not at that point, right?
Not enough is like very low.
Yeah.
Not enough is like once a week.
Unless maybe you're like very advanced. Maybe you're very advanced trainee.
So you need a lot of stimulus.
Yeah, so to make progress now, it needs a lot of training. That's a good point. You probably know by that stage. I think for a lot of people, if you're not making progress, it's a good one is you're under recovered on it.
Yeah.
And then I think probably the next level after that is, for me, I would say, is like appetite is a really big one.
Yeah. Injuries.
Yeah, I've had ones definitely where it's like I'm tired. Like sleep is a big one. So like you'll be tired, but I'll have like trouble falling to sleep.
Tired but wired.
Yeah, and then I like so much trouble waking up, and it like doesn't even matter how much sleep I got.
Yeah,
you know, like when you're recovering well, like 7 hours sleeping, like great, like good night, and you're just on to the next day. And then when you're under recovered, it's like 9 shit hours, and you're exhausted.
Yeah, yeah. I also reckon if you finish a training session, and you kind of feel like the rest of the day you're just absolutely smashed from it, like you need a nap. You've trained too hard. I'm different if you... I think a perfect day to kind of really send it home is like a Saturday.
Yeah.
Right? You're Saturday morning, come into the gym and just empty the tank because you can sleep all day. You're chilling out. You're not working, blah, blah, blah. That's a great day to kind of go super hard. But if you do that on a Monday morning and you're falling asleep at your desk at work, like you've gone too hard. You're not creating the right stimulus. You're not a CrossFit Games athlete. You're not a professional athlete. Just chill out a bit more in the gym and just like allow your body to recover. Should be energized from your training as you come out of it.
Okay, last question. Kimberly Carrasco. If Raf has any wisdom as to how he keeps his elbow tendonitis at bay while training, please share or maybe talk about it a bit more in one of the after-show podcasts. She stays away from pulling, like pulling movements. Then the pain diminishes. Then when she starts doing pull-ups again or working on grip strength, the pain creeps back in.
Yeah, so definitely that sounds like it's definitely inside of the elbow pain.
Yeah, and yeah, definitely. So that's... Yeah, it's like golfer's elbows, they normally call it, but if you hold your palms up to face the roof, it's on the inside of each elbow. And she does CrossFit training, clearly.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I've got some at the moment,
yep.
So I can speak to it more recently. Have you got any at the moment?
No, but I had it tons in the past.
Yeah. I got it recently. I think I was just doing too much of the same movements. So I didn't think I was doing too much pulling or pushing volume necessarily, but because I'm like, oh, why am I getting this? I haven't got this in ages. What I started to realize is like I'm doing the same barbell bench press, wide grip pull-ups, like too much. So I spoke to Ev and she was like, all right, you need to like mix the grips up a bit more on your pulling stretch out, like load my straight elbow wrist support sort of stuff. So a lot more stuff where my elbows are locked out to build that strength there. And then some stuff for my wrist strength and stretching out the wrist and that sort of thing. And that definitely took it down from like an 8 or 9. Like, is 8 or 9 is the point where like I'd pick up a plate and I'm like, oh, fuck, it's hurting. Yeah. To now where it's like, it's not really bothering me much at all. Yeah. And that was just, more wrist prep. So more gymnastics, wrist strengthening drills, some stretching and some more straight arm strength and just kind of mixing up my grips and my exercises more with the pulling and pushing. And that seemed to help it quite a bit.
Cool. Yeah. I mean, first of all, definitely when you're doing CrossFit training there is also a volume component to it. If you just like have a bit of this pain, you just like crush kipping work. Not that it's entirely, it's really hard to get rid of it. I had it for years and you do all the right stuff. Like you see the people, you get the needling, you get everything done. But if you just like keep going back to like, 200 plus rep workouts and shit.
Yeah.
It is like very, very challenging to get rid of it.
Because it's the cause. Yeah. Adding in the cause of the issue.
So obviously in the short term, like working on the soft tissue below and above the elbow makes a huge difference, and I always relieved it. Always found the voodoo band was like really good as well at flushing it and getting fresh blood flow into it. But the long term fix is like usually shoulder mechanics for it. So, if I could like work harder at not having my elbows flare out on different movements because I just like have the shoulder strength to maintain them in, there was like that was decreasing the stress in the long term. So in the short term, it was like, my forearms and changing my grip and decreasing the volume a little bit. And in the long term, it was like improving my shoulder mechanics and a more reasonable amount of volume for just where I was at with my training career was like the long-term fix.
Yeah. Yeah. I forgot as well. I also I took out a lot of my tricep exercises that I was doing. I think I was overdoing tricep isolation work, and it was just causing a bit of elbow issues, and that seemed to have helped it as well.
But probably last one, and I think what I missed when I was doing more the CrossFit training was just eccentric work. Yep. So I started building in way more eccentric work at the elbow, whether that's triceps or biceps, both. But just because there's tons of movement in that type of functional training with like very little eccentrics.
Yeah.
So like keeping pull up where I like pull to the top and I basically drop. I definitely would drop to the bottom and there would be like no eccentric in the movement. And I think that is not good over a long period of time.
Yeah.
Right? Just doing concentric and never doing the way down, doing it slowly. So like tempo work at the shoulder and the elbow is good.
It's funny the feedback that a lot of CrossFitters have given us on Project Body. They're like, oh my God, I'm so sore. It's like, yeah, because you're doing like so much time under tension. Like that
would be a great recovery program. Something like that or just some of those movements.
Yeah.
Just because like, yeah, there's tons of time under tension, isometric holds, everything.
Man, I'll tell you what. Yeah. Before we move on, the one thing that helped last week. So we spent, obviously just moved into the new studio, spent so much time in an office, which is like so unlike what we've done previously because at our last studio, our temp studio, we had a massive outdoor balcony with heaps of sunlight. Basically, we're in a room now, no sunlight. Wearing blue blocks makes a huge difference. And like, we don't get office time like other people get office time. No, I think we take that for granted.
We're like the opposite. So when people that work in office are like, oh, dude, I've been killing it in the gym this week three times. Yeah. I'm like, that's not killing it.
Yeah.
We're like that. We're like, dude, massive week in the office.
Yeah, one eight-hour day. Tuesday
and Friday for a little bit.
Yeah, like we did an eight-hour day in here and you and I both said the next day, you're like, I think I got sick. And
I was sick too.
I was like, I couldn't sleep. My body clock was all off. I didn't get any sunlight. But then I was like, no, I'm wearing my fucking blue blocks next time we get in here. And it made such a big difference. My energy sustained itself through the day. I didn't feel tired. I didn't feel off the whole day. Spewing, I'm not wearing them right now. But yeah, I just think now I'm thinking to myself, wow, the amount of, because even during lockdown, I spent time on the computer, but still with some sunlight and stuff like that. I just think if you're doing, you know, multiple days a week in an office with no sunlight, you have to wear blue blocks for the sake of your health.
If you didn't hear Andy's show, so if you wear the blue blocking glasses, not the nighttime ones, the ones to see a daytime screen, so you're looking at like a computer screen during the day.
They're basically clear.
Yeah, if you have sunlight coming through, like smashing you in the face because your computer's right in front of the sun, you don't need to wear them.
Yeah.
Because you're getting, you know, the other spectrums of light. I'm not an expert like he is, but like, you know, the yellow and red lights that are stopping the harmful of just seeing blue light, right? Because naturally in nature, you see all of them in one.
Yeah,
you see
sun.
The problem is the computer just sees some. But if you are like we are now in like a dungeon office with zero light, you are really getting the damaging rays. So like that is when you have to have it.
Yeah.
Eventually, for sure, it's going to be like just a normal health thing. You know, if you go into an office like this, everyone's going to wear the glasses.
Or even because we were out shopping for some of the new, like the monitors and stuff for the studio.
Yeah.
Even some monitors now come with the screen has blue light filter built into it.
Yeah, it should.
Yeah. So it's interesting how things are changing now. But anyway, you guys should definitely pick up a pair if you haven't already. It's blueblocks.com, BLUBLOX.com. Our code is MMP when you check out. That's 15% off. Okay, so we watched a series this week. It was nonfiction because you fucking can't do fiction, apparently. No, but okay, so you got so upset about fiction the other day, but we watched a fiction series.
What did we watch?
No, and you watched the whole thing as well. It came to me last week because you were having a big whinge about fiction. But no, I remember we watched a whole series and it had fiction and you loved it. You loved it. I can't remember what it was. We reviewed it ages ago. Someone in there who remembers our Netflix reviews would remember. But you
know what? A couple people did message me and were like, I've got the same thing.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So this is like, we need like an AA group for
fiction series. No, you didn't have it though, because I definitely remember you watching a long series and it was it was fiction. Yeah, I just can't remember what it was. It'll come to me. I'll tell you later.
We'll get it. But this week, this is I mean, some people might think it's fiction, but it is not fiction. The Secrets of the Saqqara Tomb. So it's basically a series on it's on Egypt, obviously, like on the pyramids, but it's a particular tomb.
It's new one.
Yeah, this brand new one they found, which is crazy they still find this shit. And it's like, you know, pretty like, it's like almost perfect, this fucking tomb that they find.
Mm, yeah. I loved Egypt. Like when I was in high school, I studied ancient history and Egypt was like one of the main focuses of like my, I guess the different pockets of ancient history that you choose. That was like one of my favorite ones. And our teacher was like, she was obsessed with Egypt. Like she'd been to Egypt like 20 times. So like she loved talking about Egypt.
There is a lot to be obsessed with.
Yeah. It's like one of the countries definitely on my bucket list.
Yeah.
It's one of those countries where people are like, oh, you don't know, it's like could be dangerous and this and that. Like, don't, and then for some reasons, you're just like, nah, I don't care.
Yeah,
like, that is that country for me. I'm like, yeah, it's dangerous. Yeah, people will fucking get shot and kidnapped and stuff all the time. I'm like, for Egypt, like, I'll go. I think it's just fascinating, and like all the conspiracies around it and stuff are hilarious. But no, this was particularly interesting, just how well preserved.
Unbelievable.
And it's interesting because I think there's going to be more and more of these in the future, because now they scan the desert with satellites and they have like projections down into the ground, and there's like thousands of tombs that we haven't discovered. Thousands. So these are going to
really?
heaps. Because they're buried so deep underground. And
it's 5,000 years old, right? I think those are the numbers.
Yeah.
Out there.
It was late.
Yeah.
A long time ago.
That is a long time. Like thousands of years before we started counting.
I just can't. Yeah. It shocks me that they were so elaborate with their burials. Mm. Like, it's crazy. We're nowhere near as elaborate as that these days. They'd bomb them and the details of the walls. You know what's crazy is how well people can read hieroglyphics as well.
Yes.
You know, they're basically reading it like it's in English. Pretty fascinating.
No, it's unbelievable. And I think just something about how long, like stepping into a room nobody has stepped into for 5,000 years. Something like that is absolutely nuts about how much has changed in that 5,000 years. And then it's, no one's been in this room 5,000 years.
Yeah.
I don't know if they're doing shit like that now. Like, do we build shit like that now? It's like, just close up this room and maybe in 5,000 years someone will find us.
No.
Well, the only one I saw was, I don't know if you've seen, but Jeff Bezos like built this clock underground. Have you seen that?
He built
a clock.
Yeah, yeah.
It's meant like to tell time forever.
Yeah.
But yeah, I guess now
it's a Rolex.
We just fucking just buried his favorite Rolex.
They don't need battery, right? They just keep going indefinitely. I don't know. I'm pretty sure. Yeah, I'm pretty sure they tell the time without battery. Yeah, it's like how the gears work. It just ticks like with gravity or something.
Fuck.
Yeah, I think that's why they're so expensive.
5,000 years ago, I'm like, fuck, we must have been loaded.
Giant Rolex. No, the last thing I'll say on Egypt though is the 5,000th year thing.
Yeah.
That I had a moment like that when and it's obviously not quite the same, but when I sat in a pub in England when I was there, and it was like the pub was built in 910 or something.
Over a thousand years old. Pubs there,
A thousand years old. A pub. I was like, this is absolutely mental. Like the floor was like a trip hazard, because the floor is obviously made of like blocks of stone, right? But the stone is not flat. Like the stone is jagged and stuff. So they say, oh, when you come in, when you're walking around with your beer, just watch your step or whatever. There's stones sticking out of the ground. Like you have to step over them and stuff, but it's, you know, it breaks every council law under the sun, but it's amazing. Yeah. Think about it, there was a guy sitting here, probably like in his knight and armor suit, probably put his helmet on the table, had his long sword in his right hand and was drinking a beer.
Yeah, no, it's nuts. When we were going on rugby, there was this pub. We didn't go visit it, but heard about it. Anyways, I think it's the oldest family business in Europe. There's some older family businesses in the world which are from Japan. It's called Sean's Bar. It's almost exactly the same as it's always been. And that was a little bit old, he said.
Sean's Bar.
Sean's Bar.
Sean is not a very British name.
S-E-A-N, Sean's Bar.
Maybe it is.
In Ireland, 900 AD.
Far out. That was like what I had.
That pub has been there so fucking
long.
It's
crazy, yeah. Yeah, it blows your mind. When you sit there and you just take it in, you're like, wow. This is absolutely awesome.
That is nice. And also awesome. Just how little pubs have improved.
They have not come along. Like, the floor's a bit smoother.
They've
basically
added in poker machines.
Yeah, that's it.
And like, yeah, some different tasting alcohol.
Yeah, no, it's ridiculous. But anyway, you know what? I will say I wasn't a fan of this Egypt show. I don't know, for whatever reason.
And you are a fan of Egypt.
Yeah, I think I just prefer like the pyramid stuff and like the conspiracy stuff. I just find that more fascinating. You know, you know the Egypt shows I like? The Egypt shows that I used to watch in ancient history that I loved were the ones where the archaeologists are telling the story, but then at the same time, they're also acting out.
Like recreating.
Yeah, like the recreational stuff. So they got people hauling blocks of stone and like and people with swords like cutting people's head off.
Yeah.
That is the shit that I didn't have any of that.
Yeah. No, I'd agree. I was like, oh, like the best bit was the trailer.
Yeah.
Love the trailer. And then it needed like, more exciting shit.
Yeah. For me, it's only a 2 out of 5.
It was just like, this tomb is crazy, but didn't really like
didn't capture it. Like, you got to recreate the scenes and the acting and stuff. Yeah, it's
I'd give it a 3 out of 5. And two, like, I'm not like, I wasn't really into history and stuff, but if anywhere like ancient history I was going to look at, it's like Egypt.
Yeah.
Like, when I saw the trailer, I was like, oh, sick. I want to watch this.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it was a little bit disappointing.
Yeah. So, last thing we'll leave you with is, again, same thing. You are coming into the silly season, and if you're single, now is the time to maximize the amount of dating apps that you're using. Like, again, it's like lead generation, right? The more lead sources that you have, the better chance you have of getting what you want, right? Whatever that is. I can't speak for you. Maybe it's the one, or maybe it's just something else.
The 10?
The 10, yeah.
The 10 whatever, for summer.
Yeah, whatever you need. But Fitify is the dating app that is catered specifically for healthy people. So if you guys want to jump on that, it's Fitify, F-I-T-A-F-Y. Sorry, fuck that one up. 6 letters. The link to downloading that app is in the description of this episode. So definitely go check that out. So if you're single, if you're into health and fitness, this app is built specifically for you. It works exactly like other apps. It is built extremely well, very user-friendly. Upload the photos the same way. So definitely jump on board that if you guys are interested. That's definitely a mandatory app if you're single. Mandatory. All right, guys. Thank you so much for tuning into this episode. Remember, we've got Black Friday sales coming up very soon. So there'll be programs on sale. There'll be training journals on sale. There'll be all kinds of cool deals and bundles. So if you're kind of waiting to start an MMP program, if you have the money, start straight away. But if you want a mad discount, hold out. It'll be very soon. Guys, thank you so much for tuning in. We'll speak to you all next week. Thank you, Project, for tuning in again to another episode of the My Muscle Project. We release an episode every single Monday. You can find us on Facebook and Instagram, the My Muscle Project, to stay up to date with everything we're doing. And if you have some time, leave us a review and a 5-star rating on iTunes.
And don't forget, we have a second show of the week, The After Show. So it's no longer a rest day on Thursdays. If you have any questions for Lachlan and I for that show, head to themymuscleproject.com/The After Show. And if you ask a question, we'll answer it on the show.
Thanks again so much, Project, and we'll see you all next week.